Good evening, and thank you for joining E-Trade's second quarter 2015 earnings conference call. Joining the call today are Chief Executive Officer Mr. Paul Idzik and Chief Financial Officer Mr. Michael Pizzi. Today's call may include forward-looking statements which reflect management's current estimates or beliefs and are subject to risks and uncertainties that may cause actual results to differ materially. During the call, the company may also discuss non-GAAP financial measures. For a reconciliation of such non-GAAP measures to the comparable GAAP measures, figures, and for a discussion of additional risks and uncertainties that may affect the future results of E-Trade Financial, please refer to our earnings release furnished with Form 8K and our 10Ks, 10Qs, and other documents the company has filed with the SEC. All of these documents are available at about.etrade.com. This call will present information as of July 23rd, 2015. The company disclaims any duty to update forward-looking statements made during the call. This call is being recorded, and a replay will be available via phone and webcast later this evening at about.etrade.com. No other recordings or copies of this call are authorized or may be relied upon. With that, I will now turn the call over to Mr. Idzik.
Thank you, Colin. Good evening, and thank you for joining us for our Q2 earnings call. While the retail trading environment was dampened by seasonality, the pace of our progress remained solid. Core activities, we continue to demonstrate the resilience of E-Trade's model, growing accounts and assets, and hitting several notable milestones. We delivered on our commitment to do more for our customers, rolling out a number of new or enhanced products and services, including an upgraded retirement center and our groundbreaking app for the Apple Watch. We also further sharpened our focus, deciding to sunset our non-core global trading platform. On the capital front, our risk profile extended its trend of steady improvement while we continued to advance the ball for shareholders on the capital plan, navigating well the second annual DFAST process, distributing more than $140 million to the parent, and completing the steps to move our clearing broker from under the bank. We also transitioned our finance leadership, welcoming a new CFO from within our executive ranks. In summation, we had a lot going on, got a lot done, and start the second half of the year in a position of real strength, focused on continuing to deliver for our customers and our owners. Elaborating a bit on the capital story, we completed a number of important components of our plan, most notably were steps to move E-Trade clearing. We completed the move on July 1st, hitting the mark on our commitment to do so in the latter half of 2015. More than a matter of stellar marksmanship, the team under Mr. Pizzi's aegis devoted significant time and energy to ensuring the transition was a smooth one, including determining funding and capitalization and completing the work to secure additional external lines of liquidity, bringing the total to approximately $900 million and contributing $150 million in capital from the bank. We are pleased to have completed this. We are now directing our focus towards what's next. We also completed the second annual Dodd-Frank Act stress tests. While not surprised, we are proud to say that our bank performed well under all stress scenarios, remaining above regulatory well-capitalized minimums by a healthy margin, with bank Tier 1 leverage remaining above 10% even when stressed most stringently, and our risk-weighted measures remaining at more than four times the regulatory minimums. It's worth mentioning that the stress test utilized our reporting data as of the third quarter of last year, and our legacy risks have diminished significantly since then, including a reduction in total loans of more than 15%. Overall, we are pleased with the results and feel good about the feedback we received from our regulators regarding our capabilities and methodology. Today, we are in a very respectable position when it comes to future capital usage, having knocked out some big-ticket items in the form of material reduction in debt and extracting once-trapped value from the bank through the brokerage moves, we march forward in determining our next capital initiatives. Mr. Pizzi will provide you with more details on our current thinking in just a few moments. Turning to our financials, I feel it's an appropriate time to formally introduce our new CFO, Michael Pizzi. Mike took the CFO baton in mid-June after having been with the company for more than a decade, latterly serving as our chief risk officer, and before that serving a number of years as our treasurer. Mike is a strong, proven leader, and his expertise, regulatory experience, and considerable intellectual firepower make him an ideal fit. As you all get to know him, I'm sure you'll share my opinion and value the dialogue with him. I'm also certain that under Mike's leadership, we will resolutely prosecute our capital plan, maintain strong oversight of our finance function, and continue to execute on other important financial initiatives. As for the quarter's results, we recorded earnings of $72 million, or 25 cents per share. This excludes a $220 million tax benefit related to the favorable outcome of an IRS audit. The quarter also included some unique items within our compensation, FDIC, and other expense lines. The first $6 million in compensation related to the departure of our former CFO. The second, $9 million in other expenses, related to a contract amendment with our former subsidiary, G1X. In a nutshell, we renegotiated the order routing agreement with our partners at G1X to provide us with greater flexibility and optionality as part of our staunch commitment to deliver the best possible execution for our customers. And last, our FDIC expense dropped sequentially by $7 million. This expense reflects the calculation of both quantitative and qualitative assessments of risk, including the composition of the balance sheet and overlaying regulatory judgment. We've indicated for some time that we expected our FDIC rate to ultimately reduce significantly, and that is exactly what happened in Q2. This is a strong testament to our progress de-risking and improving our regulatory standing. Going forward, we expect the FDIC rate will be approximately 8 bps on total assets as opposed to the previous run rate of around 20 bps. Before we get into metrics, I want to highlight a business decision made under the administration of Mr. Pizzi during the quarter, which is to discontinue our non-core global trading platform. We found that it did not have the scale to justify the associated expense, capital, or energy. The accounts we did have, while reasonable in absolute quantum, weren't actively used, particularly as customers can access much of the same international exposure through our core U.S. trading platform. Importantly, we do not expect a significant outflow of assets related to these accounts, as most of the customers are simply consolidating their investments into other E-Trade brokerage accounts. We began the closure process in May and expect to complete it in early Q3. In total, we expect to close approximately 24,000 accounts, of which 3,300 were recognized in Q2, with the vast majority expected in July. This decision allows us to focus these resources on core products and services for our customer base. Our brokerage metrics reflect some seasonality as the quarter opens at the zenith of tax season in April and closes as we head into the lulls of summer trading. DARTs of 149,000 were down 12% sequentially, with options representing a steady 23% of total activity. As volatility rose sharply in the first half of July amidst market turmoil in China and the melodrama in Greece, customer trading volumes have increased slightly, up 6% from June. Mobile continued to represent an increasingly important component of our trades, reaching a record 14% this quarter compared to 11% a year ago. And underscoring the increasing trend of mobile adoption, roughly one-third of our unique logins during the quarter were through our mobile apps. We've also seen positive traction with our most recent Apple Watch app, with already 5,000 downloads since it launched in April. Margin balances remained healthy during the quarter, even as the equity markets cooled slightly. We ended the quarter at $8.1 billion, just shy of the prior quarter's record high. We reported net new brokerage accounts of 19,000 during the quarter, with the metric reduced by two items. First, approximately 3,300 accounts related to global trading, as I just mentioned. And second, circa 3,500 accounts due to escheatment, an outsized number compared to normal levels as it related to a more comprehensive process concluded in May. Excluding these two items, net new brokerage accounts would have been approximately 25,000 with a normalized attrition rate of 8.7%, consistent with the prior quarter. Net new brokerage assets were $900 million during the quarter, down considerably from Q1, largely a result of seasonality during tax season. We've been diligent in our efforts to expand awareness of our retirement products and services. As a testament to the team's hard work, these assets have grown by more than 50% in just 3 years and have represented about one-third of total net new brokerage assets over the past 2 years. Furthermore, we continue to see stability in our managed assets, which ended the quarter at $3.2 billion. As part of our effort to continue growing this element of our customer relationships, we revamped the retirement experience on eTrade.com, creating a cleaner, simpler design with inviting content that helps customers engage and take charge. It offers interactive widgets customized to each account, demonstrating the benefits of disciplined saving and investing. An account wizard that helps direct customers to the retirement account that is right for them. And personalized checklists and to-do lists for each stage of an investor's retirement planning. In addition to the new retirement experience, other noteworthy platform enhancements are as follows. On our active trader platform, E-Trade Pro, we rolled out a robust new tutorial experience, new plug-and-play layouts to support the unique needs of traders, as well as improvements to several other customization features. We also simplified watchlist management and charting options and added the ability to trade tax lots across equity and options positions. On eTrade.com, we made a number of improvements to our stock plan participant experience and enhanced our bill plate functionality. You will continue to see enhancements and innovations as we strive to better serve our customers in the fashion they find most relevant to support taking charge of their financial health. I encourage you to stay tuned. One last item before I turn the call over. I'd like to take a brief moment to express my gratitude for the service of our former CFO. Matthew Audette was a faithful steward of E-Trade and its finances over 16 years, helping to guide the company through some of our most challenging times. We wish him the best in his future endeavors in sunny Southern California. And now it's my pleasure to turn the call over to our recondite CFO, Mike Pizzi.
Thank you, Paul. It's a pleasure to be speaking with you on my first call as CFO. I'll get right into it. We accomplished a lot during the second quarter, and we posted good results. Excluding the $220 million tax benefit, we recorded earnings of $72 million, or 25 cents per share for the quarter, compared to $85 million, or 29 cents per share in the prior quarter, which excluded a $73 million pre-tax charge related to our landmark corporate debt transaction. It also compares to $69 million, or 24 cents per share, in the year-ago quarter. To quickly elaborate on the tax benefit, it resulted from an IRS audit of prior year's tax returns. So essentially, years ago, we took a conservative position on the deductibility of certain tax losses and have been working with the IRS for some time to resolve this position. This tax benefit also resulted in an increase in our deferred tax asset, which ended the quarter at $1.1 billion, further increasing the shield against the payment of future tax dollars. Turning back to the top, total net revenues were $445 million in the quarter, compared to $456 million in the prior quarter and $438 million in the year-ago quarter. Net interest income of $267 million was down $4 million from the prior quarter as net interest spread contracted 12 basis points, partially offset by a $1.2 billion increase in average assets. The average balance sheet growth was driven primarily by third-party deposits, which moved back on balance sheet in conjunction with our new sweep platform. Although spread contracted sequentially at 250 basis points, it was in line with our expectations as interest rates remained challenging in the quarter. If we hold today's environment constant, our net interest spread would be in the low 240 basis point range in the third quarter. Our balance sheet ended the quarter at $47.1 billion, up approximately $300 million from the prior quarter. Commissions, fees, and service charges and other revenue in the second quarter were $167 million, down 5% from the prior quarter, but up 2% from the year-ago quarter. Average commission per trade of $10.96 increased 2 cents from the prior quarter and 24 cents from the year ago. The year-over-year increase was driven largely by the mix of stock plan and option trades. Fees and service charges revenues of $55 million increased from $52 million in the prior quarter. This is a result of more favorable revenue on third-party deposit relationships and seasonally higher proxy fees, partially offset by slightly lower order flow revenue. As you may remember from last quarter, with the rollout of the new sweep platform, we determined it appropriate to reclassify the revenue generated from off-balance sheet deposits into fees and service charges from net interest income. Net gains on loans and securities were $11 million this quarter, compared to $9 million in the prior quarter, and just above our expectations of $5 to $10 million. We expect to remain near the high end of the range if rates remain low, as they have been in the past couple quarters. We recorded $309 million in operating expenses for the quarter, inclusive of severance and the expense related to the G1X contract amendment. Excluding these two items, our expenses for the quarter would have been $294 million compared to $300 million in the prior quarter and $284 million a year ago. For the full year 2015, we continue to expect expenses to be within our previous guidance range of a low to mid single digit increase over 2014. This is inclusive of the two unique items in this quarter's numbers, along with the benefit to FDIC expense. The loan portfolio ended the quarter at $5.7 billion, down $412 million or 7% from the prior quarter. This welcome decline was driven by higher than average prepayments among our borrowers. Net charge-offs of just $3 million across all loans were at the lowest level since Q3 of 2001. Provision expense was also $3 million, down from $5 million in the prior quarter, leaving our allowance unchanged at $402 million. There are a few factors impacting provision this quarter. First, similar to how we previously reserved for high-risk home equity loans nearing conversion, this quarter, we established a lifetime reserve on a subset of higher-risk 1-to-4 family loans. Second, we made some changes to our modeling practices, which triggered a reevaluation of the loss emergence period on loans covered in the general reserve. Based on our review of recent loan performance, current economic conditions, and their impact on borrower behavior, we extended the loss emergence period from 12 to 18 months. These changes largely offset the positive impact of faster prepayments, improving credit quality, and lower than expected defaults on the balloon loans that matured during the quarter. As of June 30th, the balloon segment of the HELOC portfolio was approximately $120 million, with an average of $20 million scheduled to mature over each of the next four quarters. Over the next several quarters, we continue to expect provision to fall within a range of 0 to $20 million per quarter. However, we are entering a period of increasing HELOC conversions, driving potentially greater volatility in future provision. As our HELOC portfolio converts to amortizing loans, it takes a month or two following the event to get meaningful performance data, and we don't yet have that for the 2015 subset. I expect we will have more data by Q4, and at that time we'll be able to provide clearer insight into the provision expense for 2016. Turning now to the capital plan, it feels good to have the clearing broker move behind us. The entity was already capitalized well in excess of regulatory requirements. However, we had to take steps to prudently bolster the position to meet funding requirements under aggressive stress scenarios. The $150 million of capital moved from the bank addresses the permanent working capital position, and the roughly $900 million in external lines meaningfully enhances the liquidity position. We anticipate these lines will cost us approximately $3 to $5 million annually, depending on usage. As for our capital position, the bank's Tier 1 leverage ratio ended the quarter at 9.8%. Pro forma for the move of the clearing broker, it would have declined by approximately 50 basis points, implying $113 million of capital in excess of our targeted 9% leverage ratio. The bank's net income for the quarter was $114 million, which includes $20 million from the clearing broker. We will seek approval to dividend the full amount to the parent in the current quarter. In addition, the introducing broker generated $30 million of capital during the quarter, and we intend to move that amount to the parent in the coming weeks. Corporate cash ended the quarter at $406 million, an increase of $148 million from the prior quarter and well above our target of maintaining $100 million. Now with debt reduction and the broker moves behind us, we are entering the next evolution of capital planning, no longer with pressing needs, but rather a host of strategic opportunities to evaluate, and I'm proud to be running point on these initiatives. Each comes with a number of considerations, but I want to give you some context as to how we think about them. Balance sheet growth continues to be an attractive use of capital, and with our new sweep platform, we have the ability to operate close to the $50 billion threshold. In terms of composition, we are ever mindful of the possibility to accelerate the runoff of legacy funding and investments, including extinguishing wholesale funding obligations, disposing of the loan portfolio, and paying down trust preferred securities. With respect to the wholesale funding, we ended the quarter with $4.5 billion of issuance obligations, with $315 million set to expire in the second half of the year. While it is presently our intention to continue issuing those obligations, their termination would create capacity to onboard deposits. Recasting our liability structure to be predominantly core funded and low cost. However, doing so would also result in a loss of approximately $420 million pre-tax. In terms of other funding, we could redeem all $433 million of trust preferred securities, of which the final 25% currently included in Tier 1 capital will be phased out in Q1 of 2016. However, there is a handful of reasons we are not overly anxious to do so at the moment, including the fairly modest associated cost of these notes. As for the loan portfolio, there continues to be a mismatch between what they are worth to us and what they might sell for in the secondary market. So while we intend to continue to hold them on our books, as the size continues to shrink and we work our way through the conversions, the gap could meaningfully narrow and our strategy could change. With respect to other uses, we continue to prudently invest in the business while being mindful of any unique future opportunities. This, of course, includes taking advantage of the scalability of our core brokerage platform through acquisition or expanding our product and service offerings. And lastly, regarding dividends and share buybacks, while squarely on our radar until we achieve investment-grade status, we remain restricted by covenants within our corporate debt. The bottom line is that we are in a strong position when it comes to capital utilization opportunities. Having deployed a significant amount to reduce our corporate debt, we intend to continue evaluating the best path forward and we'll update you when appropriate. To summarize, we are in a position that we haven't been in quite some time from a financial and capital standpoint, and it's our goal to take advantage of this stance by continuing to provide value to our customers and shareholders. On a personal note, I am excited to take on this new opportunity as CFO of such a tremendous company under the focused leadership of Mr. Idzik and look forward to working with many of you. And with that, operator, we will open the line for questions.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to register for a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone keypad. You will hear a 3-tone prompt to acknowledge your request. If your question has been answered and you would like to withdraw your registration, please press the 1 followed by the 3. Also, if you are using a speakerphone, please lift your handset before entering your request. One moment, please, for our first question. Our first question comes from the line of Rich Repetto with Sandler O'Neill. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Good evening, Paul. Good evening, Mike. I guess the first question, Mike, thanks for going through the capital initiatives. And but we are built, you know, we've built a significant, you know, your cash at corporate cash at 406. You know, would we expect you to implement something in the quarter? You know, we've been studying, you know, looking at the different alternatives, you know, for the last couple quarters. So would we expect some implementation in 3Q?
Well, I think it's important to note with regard to ending cash across all the entities, not just corporate cash, that we took a fairly conservative position with regard to the movement of the clearing broker and held more cash, you know, across all entities during that move and the complexity of that move. As we were sizing the capital amounts that, you know, that we wanted to move from the bank into the clear, the $150 million that we talked about, we thought it prudent to hold more cash really at multiple levels. As far as capital utilization, we continue to study the alternatives, and when we have something really to come back with, we will. There's a lot of complexity and nuances to these. You know, I did talk a little bit about the debt covenants and other items, and we continue to work through those.
Hey, and I guess the one follow-up I would have, and this goes right, you know, speaks to your last answer. When, you know, you've made, you know, real solid progress on the regulatory front, moving the clearing, you know, the stress test. In fact, your FDIC premiums down significantly. And I know part of the process of looking at, you know, the wholesale funding was working with the regulators there. So I guess the question is, and you've also got the MOU removed at the OCC. So any additional, can you give us an update on the, you know, the what do you call it, correspondence with the regulators, any update on the MOU with the Fed, and how you're working with the, I guess, on the wholesale funding conversation with them?
Well, Rich, taking that envelope of data points, you got to a very perspicacious question, so I'll answer it directly. We were, of course, delighted in Q1 to have the progress we've made trying to run our business in a much better controlled and managed way recognized by the OCC in lifting their MOU. And I'm absolutely pleased to report that in Q2, we saw the same activity by the Federal Reserve Bank, and our MOU has been lifted by the Fed in Q2, and I couldn't be prouder of the team. The discussions we have with our supervisors are what I'd say close and continuous, and there's nothing we have talked to the individuals on this call about that we haven't had the opportunity and benefit of having conversations with our regulatory supervisors. So you can rest assured if we're talking about it on this call that we have had productive conversations with our regulators as well.
And can I just briefly follow up? So the MOU from the Fed was lifted as well. Could you just briefly go through, and I know I'm taking up too much time, but what the impact is of that, what that allows you to do?
The impact of that, as you noted, of course, is somewhat reflected in our FDIC premia. But what it really does, it just moves on a different us on a little different footing with the regulators in terms of either how quickly they might allow us to move and do certain things. We're just on a more stable regulatory footing and are having more discussions about the future of the firm and what we might do as opposed to the remediation that we were required to do at the MOU. So if you will, Rich, we're more on the front foot in discussions with the regulators on shaping the future of the firm and what we want to do to grow the firm and do what we can to create value for our owners. And that dialogue shifted that way as opposed to still dealing with remediation. I mean, there's, just to be clear, Rich, we're not taking our foot off the gas on trying to continue to improve our regulatory standing in terms of what we're driving here and as well as the close conversations we have with the regulators and helping shape how we build this firm better.
Got it. Very helpful. Congrats on getting that done. Thank you.
Thanks. Let's go to the next question, Colin.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Chris Harris with Wells Fargo. Your line is open. Please proceed with your question.
Thank you, guys. Another question on capital. Mike, if I heard you correctly, I think you guys are intending to dividend the full amount of excess capital at the bank up to the parent in the current quarter, now that clearing is separated. And I'm just wondering, if you do that, does that prevent you from potentially growing the bank balance sheet if you wanted to?
You heard correctly. It's not the amount of excess capital. It's the amount of prior period earnings, which at the bank level was $114 million. We do intend to apply to dividend that to the parent company. Certainly if, giving our capital target of 9%, having more capital would allow us to grow the balance sheet. So moving that capital up to the parent does create the possibility of less growth of the balance sheet versus more parent capital available. And those are some of the things that we evaluate in terms of the positioning of the bank balance sheet, versus the corporate cash position and the capital alternatives that we are studying.
I see. Okay. And if you could maybe help us out with just reviewing really quickly what the covenants are with your debt as it relates to stock buybacks. I mean, you're completely prevented from doing them at this point, or are there certain thresholds or triggers that have to be met in order to be able to buy back stock here?
Yeah, the each debt instrument outstanding has slightly different covenants. But the most restrictive of them right now would put a limit of about $100 million on buybacks. Now, if that one was not in place, we would then fall to an earnings basket on the remaining items, which would be different by debt instrument. Without getting into the nuances or specifics, We're talking it's probably about a few hundred million dollars.
And that's in totality, $100 million in totality, or is that an annual number? Or
That's the totality that would grow and scale with earnings. Now, I do want to add one important point. The covenants will go away if we reach investment-grade status. So we took into account when we sized the amount of debt outstanding, and we pursued quantitative metrics consistent with an investment-grade rating. Obviously, the assessment of the qualitative side of that is with the rating agencies, and we hope that they conclude their work soon. But I'm sure they're looking for some degree of sustainability of those metrics.
Understood. Thank you.
And our next question comes from the line of Steven Chubak with Nomura Securities. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening.
Hey,
so, Mike, I appreciated all the color that you provided on the capital side. I was hoping to dig in a bit further, first relating to Chris's question. Are there explicit actions that you need to undertake based on the dialogue that you've had with the rating agencies thus far in order to obtain that investment-grade status? Is it going to actually require a portfolio sale, or is it simply sufficient comfort with the current earnings trajectory that it can be sustained? I just wanted to have a better understanding of that, given the significant capital that you have and the share repurchase considerations.
Yeah, I think it's more the latter. In terms of the quantitative metrics and what we have achieved in terms of the debt profile and debt serviceability, we believe sets us at the quantitative level for investment grade. From what they're looking at, I think the important progress that we're talking about today in terms of what we've achieved with our regulators, the decline in expenses from the FDIC are all going to be very important items in that assessment. But I think at this point, I would say it's a qualitative assessment and sustaining the performance.
Okay, thanks. And then maybe just on the topic of the potential for a loan portfolio sale, obviously it will be dependent on the economics ultimately. But just thinking about the expense benefits that would be reaped, clearly the FDIC assessment fee would go lower from 11 bips to the target potentially of 8 over time. You also have the lower servicing costs. Can you help us think through what additional cost benefits would be realized, maybe in terms of risk management and resources allocated there once the portfolio sale is in fact completed?
Yeah, I think first just to clarify on the FDIC, the reduction in expense for the quarter that we're reporting occurred intra-quarter. So the run rate going forward will be about 8 basis points. What that means is the benefit on a full quarter basis is in the 10 to 11 million range. Now, turning directly to the loan portfolio, a sale of the loan portfolio would cause a bit further of relief, but not really a material amount in terms of FDIC premiums. So in other expenses, you're really getting into headcount, and you're getting into some degree of professional services that we've deployed around the portfolio, and certain other contracts for modeling and other items. We've never really broken those out. I'm not really going to break them out today, but it's a modest level of overall expense.
Okay, thanks. And then just one quick follow-up for me regarding the FDIC fee rate. So the 8 basis points is where you're running at currently. Is there any potential to drive that even lower, or has that lever been effectively exhausted?
I would say it's effectively where it's going to be. And I think the assessment methodology, if you review it, does look at capital ratios. It does look at asset quality. Certainly parts of the remaining loan portfolio are still calculated in that methodology. But the items that we're talking about are going to move it in a very small way.
And our next question comes in the line of Connor Fitzgerald with Goldman Sachs. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Just going back to your comments on potentially using capital for balance sheet growth, can you give us an update on the amount of deposits you have off balance sheet that you think you could bring back on? And then I guess logistically speaking, if the $50 billion cap was raised, how quickly do you think you could bring them back on balance sheet?
Well, first of all, Connor, welcome to the call, first time you're running Point for your firm.
Yeah, in terms of the total amount of off-balance sheet deposits, there's about $15 billion that's off-balance sheet. In terms of what we could bring back, it's about $10 billion of the $15. Some of it can be brought back very quickly because it's already in a sweep deposit program. Other a bit slower because it's sitting in it's in a money fund program. But all that can be brought back. So over time, the amount's about $10 billion, and you know, relative to the speed at which it can be deployed, it can be brought back fairly quickly.
Thanks, that's helpful, and thanks for the well wishes. And then on the securities yield, I think they declined a little more than I think I and a couple of the people were expecting this quarter, just given what happened with rates. Was there a change in your investment strategy or duration for the securities you guys were buying this quarter?
Yeah, no, it's not really a change in the composition of securities. The main driver there is prepayment activity, is there an increase in prepayment speeds. Even though rates in the second quarter are a little higher, prepayment speeds, as you know, lag from prior period rate effects. So the low rates we felt in Q1 drove a bit of a speed increase on the portfolio in Q2, and so the primary factor of that's really just amortization on the portfolio.
And in the wash, we're pretty happy about that.
Yeah, I think overall we're pretty happy.
All right. Thank you very much.
Our next question comes from the line of Dan Fannon with Jefferies. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Just a question on the potential P&L impact, if any, around the global trading closure that you announced. Is there, as we think about modeling, is there any other line items that will be impacted by that?
This is actually something that Mr. Pizzi started while he was in his Chief Credit Officer role, so he's been looking at this for a while. Mike?
Yeah, the global trading business, you know, really as we looked at it, starting, you know, from more of a strategic risk review as risk officer and now really seeing it to completion as financial officer, was really a non-core business. To give you some idea of trading volumes, it was 0.1% of all trades in the year 2014, so it's not a meaningful amount. It's not a meaningful amount of overall trades. The product would have required some additional technology investment. It also was capital inefficient in terms of the capital exposures at the clearing broker dealer. And you know, given the need to reinvest, given the capital inefficiency, given that it didn't provide, you know, much in terms of revenue or trading, we thought it best to shut it down. And most importantly, I think to add is that the evolution of the market since the product was introduced gives customers the ability to really have these positions and exposures in their regular E-Trade account, making the product really unnecessary. So really, the growth potential of the product was really quite limited.
And actually, with a much clearer tax positioning, yeah, as a result as well for the customer. Yeah.
Got it. And then I guess just a question on the provision, and I get your guidance and where we are, but you continue to kind of come in well below that. As we get further into the amortization period, and so I'm wondering, it seems as if even while it's small in terms of where we are, the data you're seeing continues to be positive. So I guess if there's any other quantitative or qualitative comments you could make about your outlook for the credit of the portfolio and thinking about it on a longer term basis.
Sure. The period where we have some data to look at was really around the small portion of portfolio that's in balloons. That we can say is performing better than our original expectation. Around the larger portion of the portfolio and the end of draw, we really don't have much data yet. We said that you know, of the 2015 end of draw risk population, we would not really have that data till the back half of the year. And so really, you know, we really just start to see now a pickup in the amount of loans coming to that. So in really looking at that, we need to see the event occur, and we need to see a population of data move through the delinquency chain before we can really reach any sort of assessment as to the accuracy of our model. We feel that we've captured the risk adequately and are very happy with the modeling and approach that we've taken. But until we have that data, we're not going to know really significantly one way or the other.
Got it. Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Christian Bolu with Credit Suisse. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Good evening, Paul. Good evening, Mike. So just another question on credit provisions. Just on the 1-4 book specifically, provisions have been taken up there over the last few quarters. Feels like this quarter's spike up was more of a one-off or one-time cleanup. So should we expect provisions in that specific book to maybe tick down from here, or how should we think about those trends?
Yeah, so this quarter, the provision in the 1-4 family was directly affected by what I talked about in the prepared remarks. We took a special reserve on that population of high-risk 1-4 family loans, so loans that we've identified as a pool of heightened risk. So that's additive to the allowance balance for the 1-4 family. Also, the increase in the emergence period from 12 to 18 months will increase that allowance balance as more loans are now in the emergence period. And you're right to think that those two steps are really one-time items as the portfolio is static and in runoff mode. So from there, those as loans move through the period, they'll move out of the allowance balance.
Okay, so just to be clear, if I look back, you know, through 2013, you released provisions there. It started to tick back up from Q4 last year, but you're saying at this point you probably expect it to kind of go back down.
Well, I think I have to sort of, I would put it this way. If you just sort of assume all things equal on a declining portfolio, yes, but it will obviously be driven by entry-level delinquency, by underlying LTV, by changes in severity. So in any given period, it could go up or down.
Okay, that's understood. And just another follow-up question also on the securities yield. Just remind us what kind of reinvestment yields you're getting on your AFS and held-to-maturity books.
Yeah, the marginal reinvestment rate right now is between about 150 and 200 basis points. Bounced around a little bit with rates during the quarter, but that's about where we've been averaging.
Perfect, thank you. And then on the off-balance sheet deposits, specifically the money market funds, just provide us an update in terms of the process of getting, I think, system changes and customer notifications, you know, how long that would take, maybe any timeline you can provide that would be helpful.
Well, for some of the money market funds, of course, that's a very specific choice by the customers. They can be in tax advantage product. How long it takes to essentially repaper those, that could take several months, maybe across two or three quarters to actually get that done.
Okay, that's helpful.
And our next question comes from the line of Michael Carrier with Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Thanks, guys. Just, Mike, one question on the net interest spread outlook. So I guess you gave, you know, some of the reinvestment rates. When I put that together, you know, with the wholesale runoff, you know, and then the loan runoff, just wanted to get a sense, you know, in this, like, the current rate backdrop, do you have, you know, sort of a range of like a floor and a ceiling, you know, where you guys can manage it, you know, with the current, you know, hedging strategy in place? I know longer term there's a lot of factors that will, you know, factor into it depending on what you do with the capital, but just wanted to get some sense, you know, given the decline, you know, that we saw, and then, you know, some of your comments on the prepayments.
Well, like as I highlighted before, the decline that you see in the period from securities is really driven by an increase in prepayments, and that's really driven by some of the much lower rate levels we saw in Q1. Looking at that overall level of volatility, that will go up and down as we see, you know, activity and prepayments move. In terms of spread, you know, we think that the 240 basis point range really holds for as we said in the prepared remarks. Given the marginal reinvestment rate and given where, you know, other items in our business are now. Obviously, you know, growth in the margin book can significantly impact overall spread as well as the stock loan book. Those two are going to be more volatile in terms of the equity markets, but right now we expect them to hold up quite well.
Okay, got it. And then just as a follow-up, on the expense, you know, guidance, I think you said low to mid single digits. Just wanted to make sure when you look at 2014, just because last year there were, you know, some, you know, items or, you know, charges during the year. Just wanted to get maybe the base that's off. I think from how we're calculating, it might, you know, put it around this level, you know, for the remainder of the year. But I just want to make sure we're using a good starting base.
I mean, I think it's – I mean, if you're talking about some of the larger special charges, you know, obviously those will come out. It's the operating expense number that you can see for the full year there. I think it's around, I think, $300 or so per quarter, I think, is probably the right range of overall expense in terms of the low to mid single digit number.
Got it. Okay. Thanks a lot.
Our next question comes from the line of Brian Bedell with Deutsche Bank. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Hi. Good evening, folks. Maybe just to go back to the expense. Maybe just thinking about it from a run rate perspective, you know, you're down to about 295 ex the one-timers, and then the FDIC expense going down to 290, and then the other expense was a little elevated aside from that. So what would be the driver to, you know, to bring that expense level up above 290 for the next two quarters?
Well, I think as we've talked about in the past, we've made a number of investments. Some of the investments, you know, you heard me talk about in terms of risk on the last call. While we don't expect the expenses there to go up, we have been making additional investments, you know, across the company in terms of technology and resiliency, and now beginning to make some more investments around customer experience and other items. Those are certainly the drivers of our overall expense picture from here.
Okay, so it's incremental to what's in the run rate right now.
That's correct.
Right. Okay. And then maybe just to come back to capital on the wholesale pay down, the loss of you know, the $420 million loss, obviously, and considering, I think you were working on some tax sharing agreements. There were some complications in that analysis. Just to get a better sense of how attractive you think that is. It looks to me like it would be the most accretive use of capital. I guess what is the biggest holdback from doing that?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think when you look at the yield table, you're calling it out quite correctly. It's very expensive liabilities. The marginal rate of reinvestment is quite low. So you can look at just the absolute portfolio yields. So the accretion that you're highlighting there, we're well aware of that. You know, right now it is our intention to continue to issue the debt obligations, you know, to the term of the issuance requirement, but we continue to study this. We have to take very carefully the absolute usage of capital from a Tier 1 regulatory capital perspective and be quite thoughtful about the usage of that $420 million of capital to take that charge.
Right. Okay, great. That's helpful. And then maybe just last, on the running the balance sheet closer to $50 billion, it looks like you do have some more room to do that in the near term, and this would be one, easy use of excess capital. But going back to the comment about the dividending the capital up from the bank to parents, $114 million that you mentioned, does that preclude you from running the balance sheet closer to 50 in the near term?
The amount of excess capital that we have net of the clearing broker move would put the ratio at about 9.3. Our target is 9, so there is some excess there. There is also capital generated within the period. So the dividend of the $114 million of earnings would increase the capacity of the balance sheet if we left it within the bank. We think it's the right thing at this time to continue dividending the earnings of the bank up to the parent company. If we make a change there, we will discuss it and let you know.
Okay. And maybe just lastly, just on the NIM guidance down to the 240s, is that entirely due to the securities book within your guidance, or are there other significant factors in that guidance?
It's largely the securities book. We have seen a bit of compression in overall margin yield in terms of that book as well. And there has been a small amount of compression in loan yields from the prepayment effect on the loan portfolio as well. So it's factoring all of that into what the spread guidance is.
And our next question comes from the line of Bulent Ozcan with RBC. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good evening. Just a quick question, maybe. You know, on the stress testing, it seems like you've been very successful. You've passed the flying colors, and you know, my thinking would be that the regulators are very happy with you, with the progress that you've achieved. So, in terms of maybe crossing the $50 billion threshold, what needs to be done to get over the threshold? What kind of investments do you still need to make, if any? You know, as opposed to kind of waiting for regulatory changes that might or might not happen.
We're pretty convinced right now that we have a menu of opportunities to use capital that are attractive to our owners, and the $50 million threshold is not one of the areas that are on our near-term menu.
Maybe on a name. So, if you were to address the legacy issues and you know deal with the loan book, what would be the impact on NIM? I haven't run the numbers, but maybe you could just give an update based on where we are today and the you know the 240 bps NIM that you're basically expected for 2000 for the third quarter without any changes there in rates. Have you kind of run the numbers? I just want to get a sense of you know how attractive it is.
Would you clarify that question?
Yeah. So my understanding was that you know the loan books. You know that if you deal with the loan books, you also have to debt. If you want to get rid of the wholesale funding, you also need to deal with the loan books or kind of reduce your loan books. And I'm trying to get a sense of what the impact on your overall net interest margins would be.
Yeah, I think if you look at the yield table, I mean, you can see the effective yield of the loan portfolio. We've given sort of the marginal reinvestment rate of 150 to 2. You know, a good estimate might be to take the midpoint of that range. But of course, a lot will matter here in terms of the value you realize on the sale, the capital impact, in terms of modeling that. So I think if you rough numbers, you can get pretty close, but there's a lot that has to be worked through in the specifics of any transaction. Obviously, you know, as we said before, we intend to hold the portfolio, as we feel that the value we could achieve is below the value that we can achieve in a sale is below the value of holding it, but that could potentially change as market conditions continue to change.
I see. And maybe the final one on the net interest or net income at the bank, it was 114 million this quarter, you know, up from 92. Was there anything unusual there, or should we kind of think about that as a run rate and what might be dividend up to the holding company?
No, you should not think of that as the run rate. That includes a portion of the tax settlement that went through the bank.
Got it. Okay, thank you.
And there appear to be no further questions on the phone lines at this time. Gentlemen, I'll now turn the conference back to you.
I just want to thank everyone again for joining us, and I hope everyone has a great rest of the evening. Thank you very much. Good night.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude the conference call for today. We thank you all for your participation. You are now free to disconnect your lines.